Chapter 15. The Story Comes to an End by Walter Hartwright. By the time I finished reading the Count's statement, half an hour had passed, and I was free to leave the Count's house. Mr. Rubel looked at his watch and nodded, and so I stood up and left. I never saw him or heard from him or his wife again. With the copy of the death certificate, the letter from Sir Percival Glyde, and the Count's statement, I believed I now had all the evidence I needed to return Laura's identity to her. I went straight to the offices of the Fairley family lawyer, Mr. Curl. I told him everything that had happened since I had last seen him and said that I planned to take my wife to Limeridge the next day. I told him that I wanted to publicly read out all the evidence I had to all the people of the village and to Mr. Fairley. I would then ask them to recognise Laura as the true Lady Glyde. He listened carefully and then told me that he would come with us. The next morning, Laura, Marion, Mr. Curl and I set off for Cumberland. When we arrived at Limeridge, Mr. Curl and I went to see Mr. Fairley on his own first. As I expected, he complained and was as impossible as ever.
"How could I know that my niece was alive when I was told that she was dead?" he told me.
However, we finally persuaded him to see Laura and to invite the people from the village to come to Limeridge House in 2 days' time. I spent the next day carefully writing down the story from the very beginning to the end. I then added to it all the personal statements and evidence I had collected. Finally, the day came. I led Laura into the room at Limeridge, where the local people were all waiting. People were surprised to see her, and whispers went round the room. Mr. Fairley was there, sitting in a chair, with Mr. Curl standing by his side. I stood up and began to speak to the crowd. I stated the simple facts. First, that the woman sitting next to me was Lady Glyde, and was the daughter of the late Mr. Philip Fairley. And second, that I would prove that the funeral that they had attended in Limeridge was the funeral of another woman. I then carefully read out the full story. This done, I reminded them of the date of death on the gravestone, the 25th of July, and proved that it was correct by showing them the death certificate. Then I read out Sir Percival Glyde's letter of the 25th, which mentioned his wife's journey from Hampshire to London taking place on the 26th. Marion then explained herself how she had met Laura at the asylum and helped her escape. Finally, I announced Sir Percival Glyde's death and told everyone in the room that Laura was now my wife. Mr. Curl then stood up and said that he was the family lawyer and that the evidence was all plain and clear. I put my arm around Laura and spoke loudly to the crowd. "Are you all of the same opinion?" An older man at the back of the room stood up and cried happily, "She's alive and well!" Then others started to stand up and shout out too. It was the sweetest moment of my life. Everyone, even Mr. Fairley, believed that Laura was Lady Glyde. Shortly after, I asked everyone to follow us down to the churchyard. I had arranged for a stone worker to come to the gravestone. We all stood in silence and watched as the man carefully removed those three words, "Laura, Lady Glyde." Then everyone slowly began to leave the churchyard. It was much later in the day when the man's work was finished and the words read, "Anne Catherick, July the 25th, 1850. There are two more events that need to be mentioned before I end this story. Not long after Marion, Laura and I returned to our little house in London, I received a visit from my friend Pesca. He had just returned from a few days in Paris. While he was there, he was visited by a man he did not know. It was someone from the Society who was asking questions about a tall, fat Italian man that he had been following in London. Pesca said that he had seen the man at the theatre but did not know him and only knew the name he used in England. Pesca wrote a report and sent it as he was asked to. Several days later, he heard that a body had been found in the River Seine. A tall, fat man had been killed by a knife through the heart. It was cleanly done, and there was only one other injury, a strange, deep, wide cut on the upper inside part of his left arm. So, the second person involved in the crime against Laura, Count Fosco, was now dead too. The summer and autumn passed, and our lives carried on simply as before. In the February of the new year, our first child was born, a son, and we called him Walter. When he was just 6 months old, I had to travel to Ireland for 2 weeks for work. It was difficult for me to receive letters as I was moving around during that time. It was then that the second important event happened. I returned to England to find that Laura, Marion, and Walter were not at home. I found a surprising note instead, which said that they had gone to Limeridge House. It said that there was no reason to be worried, but that I should follow them there as soon as I could. I caught a train and arrived at Limeridge House later the same day. I was shown into a room where my wife and Marion were sitting, with Walter happily playing on Marion's knees. "I can't imagine what has brought you both here," I said. "Does Mr. Fairley know?" Marion stopped me from speaking by telling me that Mr. Fairley was dead. He had fallen seriously ill and had died after just a few days of illness. Mr. Curle had told Laura and Marion about his death and had told them both to go to Limeridge House. I knew that this must mean things had changed, but I could not think quickly enough to know what it all meant. "My dear Walter," said Marion, who was enjoying my confusion and surprise. She lifted up little Walter from her knees and held him high. "Do you know who this is?" "I think I can recognize my own child," I laughed. "My dear Walter," Marion said, with a smile on her face, "this young man is Mr. Walter Hartwright, who will one day inherit this whole house and all its land." Marion was the good angel of our lives, and it feels right that her words now end our story. Penguin Readers. The Woman in White. Wilkie Collins. Level 7. Retold by Helen Holwell. Series Editor Sorrel Pitts. Read by Nigel Pilkington and Jenny Bryce. Copyright Penguin Books Limited, 2020.